better keep on moving. No time to tarry.
Peter Fonda and Susan George are Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry. There's nothing they won't try.
Larry can drive most anything. It's a motor gun and shy. Ah, with the way he moves his old machine, drives so merry wild. Larry's what you call your crazy man, and no chance he won't take. As for Dirty Mary, ain't no kind of loving she won't make. Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, drive on.
Everything under control?
Yeah, merchandise on time.
It's been delivered and it's just waiting.
George, he says he'll kill us if you don't give him the money.
Robbery's a dangerous business.
But anytime you want out, you just holler.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, baby.
The law's gonna get you if you don't look out. At least they're gonna try.
Hey, hold it!
Coming at you down every road, coming at you in the sky.
That plan is mine.
I want him stopped.
Stopped how?
Crash right into him.
You better run now, you better move. In fact, you better fly. Nobody gets away when Smithy's smacking law and order die. Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, right on.
Gonna eat your lunch, you long hair.
You remember Robert Mitchum in Thunder Road? I'm gonna powder his face.
I think someone's knocking on the door.
Crazy Larry.
He wants to play.
You got to keep on moving. No time to tarry.
Peter Fonda, Susan George, Adam Rourke, Vic Morrow, Roddy McDowell, Dirty Mary, and Crazy Larry. They don't call them that for nothing.
And welcome to another episode of Mysterious Streams, the only podcast on the internet talking about cult films and cinema in general. And my name is Nicholas Peterson, the Mime Killer.
And I'm Mary Peterson, the Geeky Senorita.
You can find this podcast on Podomatic. You can also find us on iTunes. And you can find us at our home webpage at thecriticsword.com. And that's the formalities, right?
Yes.
I got it all?
Yes.
Because I think I only do about half of this every episode.
Yes.
All right, so this episode we're going to be talking about the 1974 film
Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry.
Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. Our first car chase film we're doing on Mysterious Streams. This film stars Peter Fonda and
Adam Rourke, I think, is how you say his last name.
Is his co-partner, and then Susan George is the
token lady.
Is, I guess, the token lady. I think she was the token lady, but
she was like literally one of three women in this entire movie.
And Vic Morrow as the sheriff who's after them.
Poor old Vic Morrow.
Yep. So this is a classic car chase, a 70s film. A lot of no bras, a lot of bell bottoms, a lot of Peter Fonda. Looking pretty cool, a lot of one-liners.
Oh, I didn't realize Peter Fonda was so ugly when he was younger.
he's an interesting-looking guy. I think everyone just kind of looked uglier in the 70s.
No, Adam Rourke is flipping gorgeous.
What, the older guy in the car?
No, the older guy in the car.
Oh, you're weird.
He's so cute.
He's like 53 in this movie, I think.
So what?
Even
the older the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Yeah. Even Susan George, which... some Netflix reviewer on the movie described her as deformed looking.
She kind of was. Her teeth were all fucked up.
Well, I don't know. She was doing weird things with her mouth. I don't know if she was trying to, like, do a southern a character or... Not southern, but... I don't know. Kind
white
of a trash... Yeah, white trash your character by, like, kind of exaggerating the way her mouth moves.
Yeah.
It is kind of off-putting to look at. Because I've seen pictures of her when she's older. And,
Yeah, I've seen Peter Fonda older, and he's not that bad looking of a guy older.
I think it's the 70s. I think that everyone looked hideous in the 70s.
It's all the drugs.
It's something. There's a combination of the fashion and the hairstyles and something. But the 70s was not a pleasant pleasant decade.
Not at all.
So anyway, this movie started. If you didn't know this movie was a 70s film, if you were like, for some reason, you just fired up this film. You can find this movie on Netflix, by the way. But if you just fired up this movie not knowing what year it was made, you find out soon enough when the most 70s song of all 70s song is the intro.
And weirdly enough, that's like the only music in the entire movie.
Yeah, it's one of those films where it's just nothing but I don't know.
I kind of like that, actually.
There's a word for that I can't think of right now, when the only music in the film is music that is coming off of car radios and stuff.
Yeah.
They don't use any, like, a soundtrack, per se.
Yeah, or, like, no kind of movie score or anything.
There's a lot of movie nerds shaking their fists right now, being like, it's definitely this, but there's a word for that.
Calm down, nerds.
It just escapes me. No incidental music. I just clued in on my brain.
Mm.
That's what the name of it is.
Well, whatever it is, I dig it.
Yeah, it's an interesting way. So the film opens and there is a heist. Peter Honda?
Yeah, that's pretty much.
I nailed it, right?
Yep.
Nailed it. He has a partner and they're going to rob a Save Mart, which coincidentally is our local Save Mart.
That gave me such a kick.
I don't know why, because they filmed the majority of this movie in Stockton in the Central Valley, but for the stuff at the supermarket, they filmed here in Sonora, California, and that includes...
I drive down that road every day to get to work.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool to see a local street and to see Save Mart.
And apparently, freaking Round Table was around in the 70s.
I guess so, yeah, you could see, like...
That was weird.
That little area of town, that shopping district, hasn't changed in, like, 40 years.
Which is weird to see.
I even saw the same check-and-go place. It was in the little shopping center.
And looked like the laundromat, too, was still there.
Everything. Not a lot has changed. So that was kind of cool to see our hometown represented.
Yeah, the inside of the same one hadn't changed, either.
Yeah, so their plan is a classic... hostage, where the older guy is going to take the family of the manager of the supermarket hostage, and then he's going to give...
The manager is going to give all the money to them.
All the money to Peter Fonda, and no fuss, no muss. They're going to walk away with a big score. And then their continued plan is, there's apparently like this huge walnut orchard with like 60 entrances and 60 exits, and... Their big idea is, if they can get lost in that orchard, if they can get lost in there and drive around willy-nilly, then the cops wouldn't be able to find them because it's so confusing. This place does not exist.
Spoilers. This place is non-existent.
This magical walnut orchard that cops get confused in by all the roads.
So, it's like the Bermuda Triangle.
So that's their simple plan, and everything's going simply... Until Peter Fonda's...
Decides to dip his wick in this stick.
Well, he has a one-night stand before this big heist.
Dips his wick in this stick.
What?
And he tries to get away with...
I'm curious. Dip the wick in this...
Look, I got confused. My words got tangled up.
I thought
just
it might...
gloss over that.
Moving along.
Dip the wick in the stick. Obviously, she's not a dude because her pants are so flippin' tight. If she was, I would know what religion he was.
Huh? Oh, you're all confusing me right now.
Anyway, he has a one-night stand the night before this heist, which I feel like you shouldn't ever do. Isn't that something that most coaches don't let their athletes like?
Well, it's kind of like, it's kind of like an urban legend for boxers, mostly, that if they have sex and they release all their tension, that they'll lose an edge. Going into a fight. I think science is mostly disproven.
Which I feel like happened in this movie.
They lost their edge because...
Yes.
Well, the
He tries to sneak out, as most men do, after a one-night stand. And they escape, they leave in the loudest fucking car ever. That would literally wake up the dead.
So this bites them in the ass because Mary decides to jump into the car at the last minute... mucking up this perfect heist by first fucking around with the keys.
Which, by the way, who the fuck lays in the front seat of a car with their legs splayed open out the fucking window? Who the fuck does that?
Oh my god!
White trash people.
Remind me to mark this podcast explicit. You're already fouling the airwaves with these four-letter words.
Look, who the fuck does that?
Oh, my
white
gosh.
White trash people, that's who do that.
So, again, I blame it on the 70s. Everything that's dirty and strange and confuses me, I blame on the fact that it's the 70s.
Yeah. And so she fucks up this heist by fucking around with the keys.
And so
she throws them in the produce bin, like, where they get rid of the old produce. But spoilers, they're to her grandpa's pickup truck.
Yeah, so she's just being a weirdo, which is enough for them to keep her around as they try to escape out of town.
She's wearing a bikini top and tight pants, and they're two dudes. Of course they keep her around.
So they have this whole complicated plan. Not only are they going to lose the cops in the walnut orchard, but they also have, like, three cars they're going to change. They're going to change into three cars randomly in this
orchard. Was it three? I thought it was just two.
Maybe, yeah, just two.
Maybe, yeah.
So it's a very, very complicated plan. And it's even made even more complicated by the fact that Peter Fonda drives like an asshole.
Oh my God, he drives like an asshole.
Like, you think they would try to keep a low profile.
Because that's what smart people do.
But at one point, he, like, drives between, like, two big rigs.
Just to show off. Not even because they got a cop on their tail, which I can somewhat excuse.
Yeah.
Just to show off to this fucking chick.
Yeah, they start.
Who shouldn't even be there in the first place.
They start, he starts driving like a maniac even when he's not being chased. And so they chase a couple cop cars off the road. And we should also mention that Vic Morrow's character is the head sheriff. They don't really mention any local police agency. He's just the sheriff of all sheriffs. And he's kind of introduced as kind of like a Andy Griffith of sorts, where he doesn't wear a badge, doesn't carry a gun.
Although Andy Griffith wore a badge.
He at least wore a badge. But Vic Morrow's character is just...
he's just a simple farmer who happens to be the sheriff.
Yeah, doesn't take no guff from no bureaucrats. Doesn't care about getting new cars. He just wants to do his job.
Which I think is wonderfully hilarious that this whole cop precinct or whatever, they're trying to get new cars... And Peter Fonda is systematically dropping them like fucking flies.
Yeah, Peter Fonda. Yeah, they only one car cop, because they're spread out across this whole area, so only one cop car is able to find him at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just, like, sideswipes them into, like, a lake or something.
Sometimes into another car, into telephone poles.
But there's some great lines while they're all doing this.
These are some best lines
Peter
ever.
Fonda tells...
Tells his partner, you know, as they're leaving the chick, you know, this is a nice little town, to which his friend replies, every town's a nice little town when you nail abroad. I thought that was hilarious.
That's some good acting.
It is some good acting. I should be opposite Peter Fonda in everything he does.
His funeral?
Yes.
That's more likely. I don't know. I don't think, R.I.P. Peter Fonda, if you die in the near future. If not, I'm glad you're alive. He's not dead, is he?
I wasn't even really aware that he was a person till this movie.
I didn't even know he was sick.
I didn't even know that he was a real life person till
you've been
this
deprived.
Movie. You I know see, Jane Fonda.
You didn't see his classic film, Ghost Rider.
I don't know what the fuck that is.
It's a horrible movie.
Oh. I know Jane Fonda. That's the same, isn't it?
Yeah, more or less so.
Is that her, like, what is that? Who is that?
Maybe they're married. I'm not quite sure. I don't keep up with celebrity gossip.
Anyway, one of the other best lines is the girl tells... Her name is Mary, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Her name is Mary, and she tells him...
Did you ask me that for legit?
Yes. She tells him as they're trying to get away the first time, you owe me $50. And he's like, how do you figure that? And she tells him, if you treat a decent girl like a whore, she should be paid like one.
Well, my favorite line, one of my favorite lines is, they try to ditch Mary once. They try to ditch her at a gas station. But then as they're driving away, they try to find the map that their entire plan is outlined on. But Mary stole the map.
And because so, for white trash, she's fairly enterprising.
Yeah, she kind of knows how to make herself useful.
Well, she knows how to fuck him up so that they have to keep her around.
So as they realize that Mary stole the map that is essential to the plan, Peter Fonda slams on the brakes and the camera gets in tight on his face. And he just kind of clenches his fists and goes, every bone in her crotch. Which is
that's what I'm going to break.
Yeah, that's a pretty legit threat. How many bones does a crotch have? You're a female. Tell me how many bones your crotch has.
I don't know. I don't spend much time feeling around for the bones in my crotch.
Ayo.
The other one of my other favorite parts of this, it was when I forget why, but she bites him at one point and he like crashes into something.
Yeah, he almost flips his shit.
And then he said, "You pull a stunt like that again, I'm gonna braid your tits."
That's right, I forgot. I don't even really understand. Like, tie the tits together and, like, twist them up, I guess?
I don't know what the fuck he's saying. I think Peter Fonda just says words throughout this entire movie. I don't even really think he knows what he's saying.
It's pretty epic. So, they're driving around. Every time they get into a new car, the car is immediately made by the cops. The cops are constantly chasing them. Vic Morrow,
which I would like to point out, probably wouldn't happen if when they first changed cars, it happened. They stashed the car at a flea market, to which, like any female, Mary gets distracted by the shinies at the flea market. Yeah. But she's looking at this. I assume it goes on the hood of a car. Yeah, I don't know what the hell it is. She doesn't even buy it. She sees it, and the guy next to her sees her admiring it. At which point, he literally knocks her hand away from it and buys it himself. So she comes up to him again, pretends to knock into him just to pick his pocket of it, and takes it. And then he sees that the cops are looking at the car that they got out of, and he tells the cops, oh yeah, they're in that lime yellow car, which is the ugliest fucking color I've ever seen on a car.
The 70s. Yeah, women be shopping. You know.
So I would just like to say that the only reason their cars get made is because this bitch doesn't know how to be low-key.
Well, despite the fact that their cars keep on getting made and cops are always on their tail, but they keep on beating the cops.
They do.
There's one car. They have one new car that's ready. One brand new Interceptor that one cop is going to be getting into chasing them. But in the meantime, Vic Morrow is going to be getting into a helicopter and take to the skies. And this is when him and Peter Fonda, they find out that they have a scanner with a radio in their car. That's how they're able to stay one step ahead of the cops most of the time. And so he kind of gets a combative relationship with him and Vic Morrow. They start taunting each other over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to jail. Never mind. No, no, you won't. Oh, my God. And they start yelling at each other.
Being men.
Yeah. And Vic Morrow, of course, he's going to be killed by a helicopter.
Not in this movie.
Well, in real life, he gets killed by a helicopter some years later.
What was he trying to do? It was a scene in the... You were saying the Twilight Zone, right?
It was a segment for the Twilight Zone movie, yes.
And, like, he was in some kind of water... It was some, like, common water scene. And
it was like a Vietnam flashback or something like that, but yeah.
Wasn't he trying to save two kids?
He was trying.
And then his head gets cut off.
Well, everyone's head got cut off.
Which sucks.
But this is him... This is him in happier times. Getting into a helicopter without...
And without any heads falling off.
So the car chases start getting a little bit more intense. The Interceptor, the fancy new cop car, finally catches up to them. And they can't outrun them. They just maneuver it so that the Interceptor gets knocked into another car. And then a power pole falls on it.
Which made me laugh really hard because... The officer driving it, the whole time he's chasing him, is just taunting him. And he says one of the other funniest lines that I don't even get. I don't even know how this was even an insult in the 70s. And you'll have to excuse me, but he says, "I'm going to eat your lunch, you long-haired faggot."
Well,
how is that even an insult?
Yeah, I guess it's like a come on and insult, I guess. I don't know. Maybe a little bit of flirtations.
Oh, my God.
Well, we should
all... So, the telephone pole falls on the car, and he gets out, looks at it, as if to confirm that, yes, that is indeed a telephone pole on his car. And then he gets back in and makes a call, which made me laugh quite a bit.
So, finally, the only thing they have left to outmaneuver is the helicopter. And that is kind of anticlimactic. The helicopter is kind of, like, driving around, slamming on top of the car... And then it runs out of gas. I for some reason, I thought that this helicopter, like, flipped into something or flipped into a gorge or ran into a tree. But it just runs out of gas and lands in a field. And that's how they beat the helicopter. And then the sheriff, and this is where I take exception to the Wikipedia page, because it makes a mistake, in my opinion.
Wait.
Well, I'm
You're telling me that Wikipedia page made a mistake?
I'm saying
it might... lying to you?
They might be misinterpreting the movie.
Oh, my God.
The sheriff, most of the cars are wrecked. the brand new interceptor's been wrecked. The helicopter's out of gas. And really, he really has only one thing, weapon left in his disposal, which is the power of imagination. So he starts issuing orders to a bunch of fake cop cars wind him up. So he's giving a lot of orders to a bunch of fake cop cars to make it seem like they're being surrounded. And they start driving like maniacs, trying to outrun all these cars that don't exist.
But then one stupid asshole has to go on the radio and is like, "Sir, I'm not anywhere near there. I don't know what you want me to do."
And they go, "Ha ha! If they're doing these things, we won, we won." And they have a moment of celebration before they drive onto some railroad tracks and a train hits them and they just explode.
Which makes me think that maybe some sort of Michael Bay director was called in towards the end of this.
For this explosion?
Because I feel like that explosion was way too big for a train. getting a car.
Well, you didn't see the scene where Peter Fonda talked fondly about his hobby of collecting oily rags that he puts in the trunk of his car.
I must have missed that scene.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh man, I love oily rags, and I love putting them in the trunk of my car. I really hope nothing runs into us, because if it does, it's going to be over." Because not only do I have the oily rags in the trunk, I also have a bunch of fireworks that I keep under all the seats, so.
You never know when you need to start a celebration.
So, a lot of cool car stunts. It's a fast-moving, tight 90-minute film. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it didn't feel like 90
minutes.
Here's where I
took exception. If you read the Wikipedia synopsis of this film, it claims that they randomly ran into a train, which I don't think it was randomly. I think
that sheriff knew that eventually they were going to hit train
tracks. Yeah, I think the sheriff was looking at a map and saw the train tracks and was trying to get them either near or he was trying to trap them. And to wind him up and to force him to make a mistake, which they did. He ran into a train, which is about as big a mistake as you can make while driving a car.
Which I think is a pretty fair assumption, given that Peter Fonda literally drives like a fucking maniac this entire movie.
Yeah, he drives like an a-hole.
Doesn't care about running into things. He thinks that he's such a good driver that he'll be able to just like barely pass it. Which it happens fairly often, but...
So that pretty much wraps up the film, and then as they burn to death, the credits roll. I feel like I've seen this ending a couple times in some movies.
I did read on IMDb that this is like this movie, especially this last car scene, was inspiration for like Smoking the Bandit and Tarantino's Death Proof or whatever the hell one of his fucking movies. So things like that.
I think the other movie I saw. I'm trying to remember it. There was a movie George Romero made about. Knights like at a Renaissance fair that jousted on motorcycles with Ed Harris, and at the end of that movie I think they got like just run over by a semi truck at seemingly out of nowhere. Now that felt more random than this.
Although one of my favorite car stunts in this movie is, I don't know what it's called when they move the road, they have like the bridge and they move it up. I don't know what that's called.
Bridge
whatever the hell, but Peter Fonda like literally uses this as a ramp to get to the other side, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of cool car stunts, and especially when you watch a movie from the 70s, even though everything looks ugly, but you know, no CGI, so you know it's all stunt work and all quote-unquote real.
Which is pretty fantastic.
So, which is one of the reasons why these movies are so admirable and fun to watch.
Yes, because we just watched Devil's Advocate last night, and the blue screen and CGI in that movie is fucking awful.
They had blue screen and Devil's Advocate when they're just, like, standing out on a patio.
Like how the hell do you not have a fucking balcony in New York City, really?
And that you can stand on?
Yeah. Sorry, well, that's a whole different podcast.
So,
yeah.
We don't have a movie we're going to announce to do next week. You can check my Twitter, MimeKiller, on Twitter, and I might tweet what our next film is going to be. And so, yeah.
Assuming you don't end up in Twitter jail.
I hate Twitter jail. It's the worst. Please don't send me to Twitter jail. But if you want to just contact or talk to me about any of the episodes or any of the movies we've watched, you can find me at Twitter @mimekiller.com/something.
It's just @mimekiller when it's Twitter.
I don't get it.
Yeah, Grandpa.
Oh, Grandpa, confused.
I'm unaware how you're even able to handle this podcast, Grandpa.
You know what? I barely understand it. I can barely get myself dressed. But you're at Mrs. Mimekiller, if
yes.
Someone wants to talk to you.
I am at Mrs. Mimekiller. If you want to berate me for my various use of explicit language.
Oh my gosh, right off the top.
yep,
sending us in the R-rated territory. I think you curse more in this podcast than they cursed in the movie.
I don't really think... Like, the worst thing that he ever told her was he called her a dingleberry. Like, I fail to see how that's really an insult.
Well, they also said faggot.
They did say faggot. Although
since you don't consider that a bad word, that makes you a homophobe.
So well, I just don't consider that a bad word because it's such fucking insult. Like, eat your lunch? Who the fuck says that?
Oh, I thought you were... Okay.
No, I know it's a bad word, but, you know, in the 70s, nobody cared about gay people. I'm sorry. It's true.
Wait, hold on. Nobody cared. How do you know? I think
because
this,
they don't.
I think the stone...
They were too stoned to...
Yeah, that's your summation of the 70s.
Everybody was so fucking high.
That's your... Oh, man, I'm going to get out of this podcast before you say something else. I think the Stonewall Riots were in the 70s.
I don't even know what that is, Grandpa.
Oh, my gosh. All right. All right, I think that one Harvey Milk was elected in the 70s, or was that the 60s? Do you know who Harvey Milk is? Oh, man, I'm getting out of here. All right, that wraps up this podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review us, tweet me, message me. I just thrive off...
He needs your attention.
Oh, please. I need attention.
His attention tank is really low.
I need attention. I need RTs. I need faves. It's the only thing that keeps me up in the morning.
Yikes.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. We'll hopefully be back sometimes in the beginning of March.
Yes.
Have a great day.
Have a good one.